You're listening to The Central Cast, recorded each week in front of a live audience in Glendale, California.
Well, it's good to be here. I'm so grateful that Bob and Max and Aaron, who isn't here with us today, he isn't dead, he just is not here with us today, have allowed me to come and share some words. Can everybody hear me okay? I have really weird mic etiquette sometimes, so cool. And I just wrote a few things, nothing crazy, but I'm really grateful to be here and have Central be a kind of, not just a spiritual home for me, but a real place that has fostered my creative thinking, my spiritual thinking, the way I think about how we can all live together in the world. So it's really, really a joy to see some old faces from 3 years ago when I lived here and to see new faces. I just want to shout out my very best friend, Jalen, who is here supporting me. Thank you so much. I love you, and it just means so much that you're here supporting me. And my godmother and my aunt, Nikita and Sharon, I just want to thank y'all for coming, and family. If it seems like I'm going a little astray, just say, like, amen, or that's good, Jalen, or I'm an artist first and foremost, and in the words of Erykah Badu, we are sensitive about our you-know-what. Yeah? good save, right? Yeah? So, you know, throw out some validation if I need some. Max, you know what to do. Christian up top, let me hear how it'll sound. Thank you. that's a really good job. So, some regular, super regular night in the beginning of June, I got a not so regular FaceTime call from a very close friend of mine. And FaceTime calls are really intrusive to me. Does anyone like love FaceTime or hate FaceTime? Well, here's the problem, mothers, about FaceTime. FaceTime is very intrusive. It is like going to someone's house and knocking on the door without telling them that you are coming. It is like being in the shower and someone walking in and just opening the curtain, you know? It's very intrusive. But I got this FaceTime call from my friend. And it was one of my best friends, so after the initial shock of the FaceTime ringing, I put on my metaphorical shower robe and I answered the call. Hey, friend, what's up? Hey, she says. And there's something super weighted about her, hey. Those three words are heavy in her voice, and I can tell she's holding her phone like a tall glass of steaming hot water filled to the brim, like it's a glass of rim-high hot water flirting with the idea of jumping out and letting itself sting the wrist of my friend who's just calling to say, hey, our good friend died today. Our good friend was also flirting with the idea of jumping and actually did. And I'm stinging at, then click. I hang up on her and curse the phone and the FaceTime because I knew I shouldn't have answered in the first place. It was late, I should have just gone to sleep, ignored the call, dealt with her in the morning. But the news would have been the same. Our friend had committed suicide. The news the next morning would have been the same. Said with the same sting of finality. Psalms 30 and 5 talks about weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. Oh, really? Because as I held my phone and looked at my weeping face in the reflection of the black screen, I knew that when the morning came, it was just the beginning of more weeping. more crying, more heartbreak. I called my friend back, and I told her I was on my way over to her house, because the morning was coming, and I needed help getting through it. I knew the morning would not bring my friend back. I wanted some genie to come and grant me 3 wishes. 1, bring my friend back. 2, bring my friend back. 3, bring my friend back. I knew that God wasn't going to do that. Why wait for some resurrection? I wanted a genie to come and perform some magic trick. I wanted her life back, and I wasn't going to get it because of death. Because of death, I showed up at my friend's house crying. Because of death, other friends showed up crying. Because of death, we were all crying together. Because of death, my friend and I had to make phone calls to other friends who hadn't heard the news yet. Because of death, in a moment of stillness and slices of pizza, a friend asked why, then screamed and fell to the floor as tears ran down the side of her cheeks, rushing to the back of her head to pillow her fall. Because of death, nobody moved. Because of death, she got back up, and we just handed her another slice of pizza. Because of death, she chuckled. Because of death, we were all kind of chuckling as we stood in the storm with each other. Weeping now freely, knowing we had created a space that can hold our grief. We spent 3 straight days together, holding grief, making calls, crying, handing out slices of pizza, and chuckling about whatever humor had the courage to sneak in and make itself known. Because of death, something new was happening. Something stronger than death, but deeper than life. Because life is finite, but what we were starting to feel, create, allow, was something that smelt like eternity, something fragrant coming in and washing the stench of death away. It wasn't just life. It was more than life. We were a group of heartbroken friends who, from our grief, decided that we had to start taking care of ourselves and each other better. Weekly phone calls, check-ins, accountability. Everyone was the strong friend, and everyone needed to be cared for better. Out of death, we were not just seeking life, but new life, more life, more and more life. And it wasn't linear and headed towards some end, but it was deep and horizontal and not occupied with our minds' feelings about death. This thing we were creating was happening because of death, and it was creating more life. And against my initial yearnings for some genie to come and make magic happen, spirit was coming to make miracles happen, and I was really leaning and learning the difference between the magic and the miracle. I wish my friend was around to see us, more healthy us. 3 days in a house together, and on the 3rd morning of the 3rd day, I checked the tomb of my heart, and it was empty. She was gone. And what was left was more space she helped carve for me, for more life. More life she will not experience with me. I thank you, Larice, in your life and in your death. You were here almost 3 years ago to watch me give my first sermon at Central Avenue Church. And I dedicate my words to you today. So it's been a tough year. Me and Larice were really, really, really good friends. She sat right about here 3 years ago, the first time that I spoke, and she was that validating friend. Every time I said something she liked, she would, that's good. And I was like, at least Larice is down. Maybe she's lying, who knows, but it's making me feel good. And Larice went to college with me, and she was an artist, and I'm an artist. And I started to think about this idea of death and what comes after death. And it kept bringing me to this idea of life, which I thought was interesting. You know, that there's life and then there's death, but could there be a possibility for more life? And that's the thing that I've kind of been thinking about a lot while I've been figuring out what to talk to you all today about. And when Aaron first called me and was like, hey, Jalen, can you come speak? He was like, I know you do some activism work and you do your art, and maybe you should come speak about your art and your activism. And I was like, yeah, that makes total sense, because that's what I do. But then I couldn't write anything, and I couldn't think of anything to say. And I kind of run out of things to say, I thought. And I was like, I don't really want to talk about my art and my activism so much. The thing that I actually want to talk about is this thing that I don't have a lot of answers for. I want to talk about this event that happened when all of my friends got together in a living room and we cried for 3 days. I want to talk about what we created together. I want to talk about these support systems. I want to talk about the fact that I was sitting by a friend who I thought was the closest person to me, and she revealed to me she had been in therapy for 2 months and I didn't even know. I want to talk about the fact that when she said, is anybody else in therapy, about 3 or 4 other people in the room raised their hand. I want to talk about the fact that no one was asking the questions, hey, are you doing all right? Hey, are you good? Cool. Did you have anything you wanted to talk about? Did you need any prayer about anything? That it took this bubbly life force to pass away to bring us back together. But what was awesome is that it brought us back together in a way that wasn't about forgetting how painful her death was. That wasn't about forgetting about how tragic the situation was. That wasn't about forgetting the fact that we were all thinking about, what did I do wrong? That within all of that, we had created new space for more life, more and more and more life. And I started to think about all the ways in which more life is created in response to death sometimes. That more life is created sometimes because of death. And then I started asking my question, is there life in the midst of death? And what does that look like? When I graduated from college, I got a BFA in performing arts. I was like, I'm going to graduate, then I'll go to the Broadway, I'll tap dance, and the rest will be history. And that didn't really happen, because while I was getting my education, the Black Lives Matter movement was starting. And while I was getting my education, every weekend a new body was shot. And while I was getting my education and memorizing lines, I was also memorizing the names of young Black and brown brothers and sisters who had been killed by the hands of police. And I started to ask myself, what do I do in the midst of all of this? And I started to change my intention behind what it meant to be an artist, what it meant to create. I started to lean into my discomfort, lean into the feelings of hopelessness, and actually create stuff out of that. I started not to just challenge the content of the stories I was telling, but how I was telling them in the first place. As I fight for a more equitable and just society, am I fighting for that same thing in my vocation? So then, what it meant to be an artist for me was about not just the stories I tell and the characters I tell and trying to rectify something going on in the world, but it was about who I hire. It's about what rooms I made sure I was in. It was about stopping the small microaggressions I see every day. It was about knowing that, okay, I may be walking into some white spaces today, but I'm gonna wear my Black Lives Matter shirt, so they gonna know today. That's what it was about for me. And that is how I found not just life amidst all the death, but more life amidst all the death. All the tragedy that we see every day on the news, no matter what it is, there's a way of leaning into it, leaning through it, letting your heart completely break, not stopping until you find something new on the end of it. That there's actually more life on the other side of it. And do we have the stamina? Do we have the will? Do we have the hope to actually go all the way through it? So I really felt that I was doing some good work. I felt like I was doing the work, what it meant to be an artist responding to this time. I still feel in many ways I am still doing that work. But that work gets tiring. And that work can feel lonely. And that work can feel like its own kind of death. And I've been in New York for about 3 years now, and I have been grinding nonstop. Work, 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 creating, content. I started an organization called Words on White. It's an arts and activism organization. I was over here on the board of an organization called the Broadway Advocacy Coalition, which is an arts and activism organization. I was creating a play about the prison industrial complex over here. I was directing a play about a boy who was suffering with HIV/AIDS and trying to find love. I was doing and doing and doing and doing, and I felt like parts of me was starting to die. It reminded me of something the Bible talks about, this idea of not being able to pour new wine into old wineskin. And I myself was becoming the old wineskin. But the content never stops. The tragedies to respond to never stops. The newness never stops. The inspirations never stop. So what was I gonna do to become new again, to make more space for it, to make more space for it to fill up? And church today, you're actually seeing me in the middle of that process. At the end of 6 months of intense content creating, in the midst of transitioning where I'm living, in the midst of transitioning out relationships that aren't working, in the midst of my career doing different, unique, special things, you're seeing me actually experience a kind of a death. Change. Which, when you say it out loud, when you write it on paper, it doesn't really sound that threatening. That's what life is. You're changing all the time. But inside, it's a real kind of apocalypse sometimes. But thinking about Larice, thinking about what my friend would have wanted me to do, and listening to her voice say, Jalen, you need to take a break. Jalen, you need to ask somebody for help. Jalen, you need to take care of yourself. Jalen, you need to eat a little better. Jalen, you need to make sure you're drinking your water. This person who was always not always answering that question for herself would have been driving those questions to me. And so out of respect for her, I decided that, you know what I'm gonna do? Aaron told me to come speak. I'm actually gonna stay in LA for a month. And I have a couple of gigs here and there, but I'm actually gonna just recharge. And I'm gonna create without pressure. And I'm gonna listen to myself. And I'm gonna try to create more space inside of me for more life. And it feels good so far. I've been here for a day and a half, you know? I feel really You know, some more life coming already, you know. Do I look brand new? I feel it. Something that I was also thinking about is when we hear this Jesus story, when we think about crucifixion and resurrection and what that means, when we think about resurrection, I used to think about it as a kind of a magic trick, you know, about something that wasn't there anymore, about showing up to a tomb and seeing the absence of something. And a way that I'm starting to think about it now is resurrection isn't just about the absence of something. Resurrection is about a new space opening up for more life and more opportunities. Weeping may endure for a night, but joy comes in the morning. I want us to think about that phrase that we probably hear a lot and how it's become kind of a cliche, kind of a Hallmark card. And I want to challenge us to read it in a little bit of a different way. That may, and weeping may endure for a night, is not just about what could happen. Weeping could happen. But what if may was really about giving weeping permission to come in? Weeping, you are allowed to endure for this night. And what if that joy that comes in the morning, morning, is really a joy that you find inside the morning, mourning? And what would that mean? What would that mean to actually lean so far into our pain and our grief and our sadness, lean that far into death to realize there's actually a chuckle to be found here somewhere? And is that enough to actually get us out the door the next day? It was enough for me. It was enough for me to start asking the questions of what else is inside of this? What else is deep inside of life, horizontally and not just vertically? What else could be going on? What more life am I missing? Because the opposite of death is not life. The opposite of death is more life, deeper life, eternal life, heavenly life that can be found right here, right now. One of my favorite plays is this play called Angels in America. And there's this character named Prior Walter in the play. And he has AIDS, and he's dying of AIDS. And this angel comes to basically take him from life, to say, hey, we'll actually take you, this chorus of heavenly angels, we'll take you away from life. We'll get rid of this thing. Come escape with us. And Prior Walter responds in a way that feels so right to how I want to respond when I want to give up, but don't. He says, I want more life. I can't help myself. I do. I've lived through such terrible times, and there are people who live through much worse. But you see them living anyway. When they're more spirit than body, more sores than skin, when they're burned and in agony, when flies lay eggs in the corner of their eyes of their children, they live. Death usually has to take life away. I don't know if that's just the animal. I don't know if it's not braver to die, but I recognize the habit of living, the addiction to being alive. So we live past hope. If I can find hope anywhere, that's it. That's the thing. That's the best I can do. It's so much not enough, it's so inadequate, but still, bless me anyway. I want more life. And something I want to offer all of us in the room, I say it to myself as I say it to everyone, as death comes into our life and we navigate it, when we navigate when it happens to other people and we have to deal with that, when we navigate being in the midst of death and we have to deal with that, when we navigate trying to live despite the death, I want to offer the prayer, but still bless me anyway. I want more life. I'll close in some prayer. Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for waking us up, starting us on our way, putting clothes on our back, food on our table. Thank you for this church community, God. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. Lord, I just pray that something that was said today touches someone and allows them to lean more into their life to discover more life. Thank you for your son. Thank you for this journey. Thank you for this time. These and many other blessings we ask in your darling son. In Jesus' name, amen.
Each episode of the Central Cast is followed by an interactive discussion. If you'd like to participate in recordings, or if you're interested in exploring progressive faith and theology for a postmodern context, check out centralavenuechurch.org. Here's this week's unedited discussion.
Hey, my name is Crevin. Crevin, like saying Evan with CR. Yeah. How old were you when you moved to New York? Yes.
Oh. 22.
Got you. So, like, when you first moved to, when you first moved there, how did you feel? Like, did you feel like you followed your gut feeling? That's how I felt when I moved here.
Any other questions?
Hello.
Comments?
In the back.
Hi, Cassandra again.
Hi, Cassandra.
I read something very recently, and it struck me when you were speaking. Since words matter, this post that I read was talking about when we talk about suicide, dropping the word committed, because it carries some kind of guilt or shame, and I think that's important. I know that, or at some point it was a crime to kill yourself, and maybe it still is, but it also just feels like something important. To not make it that, to not make it.
Yes.
That.
Yes.
So I just wanted to suggest that we think about taking away that shame from it and not making it a crime.
For sure.
Thank you. Any other thoughts? Yes.
Hi, my name is Scott.
Hey, Scott.
So being so committed and working so hard on multiple fronts in New York, how hard was it for you to make that decision to pull away and come here and stay for a month?
It was easy by the time I made the decision, and I probably should have made the decision a little earlier. So what was hard was actually listening to my body and the world around me. Usually I think what I do is wait until life gets so loud that it becomes a wall that just falls on top of me. And then I'm like, oh, well then maybe I need a break. you know, when really I probably knew 3 or 4 months before then, hey, you need to take care of yourself. You know what I mean?
Good question. Yeah.
Jalen, you talk about microaggressions and that being something that you're like actively confronting, and that I'm curious from the perspective of people who are just kind of entering into this and understanding the microaggressions that we take part in, can you share with us a little bit about how to do that responsibly, what it means for us to be aware of our privilege and those kinds of things, and kind of how what's helpful, a helpful way for us to engage and to start along this process if it's not something that we've been doing for long?
To speak to microaggressions as a thing, I mean, I don't really know how Merriam-Webster defines it, but there's nothing micro about microaggressions, that to the people that they are projected onto, it is a big aggression. It feels aggressive, and it feels like something we have to navigate by ourselves alone. Yeah? And so one thing I would say is there is no aggression microaggression. It's all aggression. It's all violent. Some is conscious and some is subconscious. And the subconscious we tend to call micro. It is not any smaller to the people who are on the other end of it. And then the other thing I would say is that talk to each other, you know, that there are so many conversations going on in our current political moment. There's things that are going on in the women's movement. And it's important to reach out to women and listen to what they have to say. But as a man, it's also important for me to like talk to my brothers and be like, hey, that thing that you did, not cool. Can we talk about that? And to the same token, talking about white people is the exact same way. That so often it feels as if black people become the encyclopedia for the black experience for white people to peruse through and then decide what we want to use, what we don't want to use, what we want to know, what we don't want to know. You know, find your black friend for sure. Talk to them, get dinner, all that stuff. But also talk to each other, you know? Those questions that you want to ask me first, think about how often I've had to think about answering that question, just maybe even in that day. And then go to Google and see what they have to say first, see what books they recommend. And then come to me after that sometimes, you know? Yeah, sure. Like a microaggression that I recently experienced. I'm a theater maker, and I was asking a producer friend of mine for some rehearsal space, and she knew me very well. And she was like, yeah, I'm going to make a call to this organization that I work with, and I'm sure they'll give me some keys. And I was like, well, that's kind of weird that they wouldn't even ask you, like, why you need keys to the studio or whatever, but sure. And she was like, called me 30 minutes later, and they were like, yeah, pick up the keys tomorrow. They'll be under the mat. Come on in. Say hi to everyone. It'll be cool. Just go to the back where the studio is. Unlock it. It's fine. And I was like, okay, that's pretty dope. Then I went, got the key, opened it up, and immediately I felt that they thought that what they were gonna get was someone who was a white man or a white woman who was coming to use their facility or space. And it was very hard to get anyone to say hi to me. It was very hard for anyone to help me find where I had to go. You could tell that my presence in that space was so out of the norm that it disrupted the working culture of that space. And I guess she was the artistic director, was called from where she was just to kind of stand in the back of my rehearsal and watch what was going on. Something I know would not have happened if I met the expectations of the kind of person that usually walks into that space. Really quick, another thing that happened recently on a show I was working on. I was dressed like this, I guess jeans and a t-shirt. Maybe I had sweatpants on. I was assistant directing 5 shows in a festival. I walked backstage and one of the men who worked at the office followed me all the way back to my dressing room and asked if I knew where I was going and if I needed any help. And on paper, that question is fairly innocent. But within context, within tone, within like the fact that I know there's seven other tech, all white tech workers who you don't know either, who are walking around in ripped jeans and tank tops, and you haven't asked them if they need help finding anything or if they know what they're doing here. And I knew what was really going on was, oh no, you think that my body in this space is some threat to your work environment and you have to check up on it. And so we actually ended up, the director saw it happen and she actually called him into a meeting. We actually had like a real conversation and he was like super open and super responsive to how that felt and understood where I was coming from. But I think that actually having those conversations when the microaggressions happen are a huge step forward, and not just being like on my part, oh, well now I feel bad all day, or on his part being like, oh, what, I didn't do anything wrong. Like, let's just confront it when it happens and then we move forward. And he came to the show and gave a donation. It was great.
Hey, going back to you and your community of friends after the tragedy, in a community like that where you have people who are always going through anxiety and depression, and you have friends that you want to look after and you want to take care of, what do you look for when you feel like it's time for me to ask them how they're doing, it's time for me to check in? What are the things that you look for, and then how do you start that conversation?
That's a good question. And I'm still in the middle of that process, but one of the things that I wasn't doing before this is when I would think about a friend, I would just think about them and be like, oh, I thought about that person, cool. And now just a really small practice that I do now is if I think about you randomly, I'm just gonna take that as some kind of sign that maybe, let me just reach out and say hi. Let me just let you know that you were on my mind. I don't know what's going on with you. Maybe it's just, hey, what's up, you good? You good? Great. And maybe it's sometimes something deeper. But for me right now, it's just about like trusting my gut. When a friend or a loved one comes in my head, call them, text them, let them know, hey, I'm thinking about you. If you need anything to talk about, I'm here.
On that same note, when opening up those kinds of conversations, a lot of times, like recently, I've been kind of opening up those spaces with my friendships, and initially, me and a friend will be like, hey, we're gonna talk to each other, we're gonna keep each other accountable, we're gonna check in. And I've noticed this pattern of when I do that with people, there's this initial, the first couple times I talk with them, there's a lot of resistance. And I'm like, hey, just checking in with you, we said we'd be doing this, and I wanted to know how you're doing, I'm letting you know how I'm doing. And initially they're like, hey, I'm fine, what, why would you ask? Like, what did you notice, is something wrong? I'm wondering if that's something you've noticed in your community, that after initial shock or something, there's a time of kind of pulling back?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a couple of instances where I can tell there's someone who's like, hey man, I'm good, I'm fine. Thank you. And I don't take that personally. I don't take that as some kind of affront to what I'm trying to do, because I did my part, which is just reaching out. And so whether or not you want to respond or not, what you know for sure is if you have something to say, Jalen is someone you can come to. And that's the work. That's the end of the work for me. And then hopefully that person has an invitation into maybe a deeper conversation. And if they do, then I take it. But I don't, I'm not so presumptuous as to think that just because I check on you, that means now you're gonna tell me all the deep, dark secrets of your heart and that, you know, whatever you were thinking about yesterday, we're gonna talk. I just need you to know that right here is a resource, and I need for you to know that I hope that you can be a resource for me as well.
What's up, man?
What's going on, Jalen?
Good to see you.
You too. Have you ever had situations where you've ever had, you know, where speaking on the situation where you had the microaggression, you know, in the studio, have you ever had situations where you felt like they were microaggressions, but it may have just turned out where those people may not have been as welcoming as you might have hoped?
No. I wish I had more to say about that, but no, I haven't had that experience. I'm not saying that that experience does not happen,
sure.
But usually when it is a microaggression, I'm pretty sure it's a microaggression.
Good.
Yeah, I think, Jalen, one of the, actually, weirdly enough, I was just talking with Christian about this morning, and we were talking about that kind of space of like how, like, sometimes we're not aware that we're engaging in microaggressions, but that doesn't mean that they're not still microaggressions. I've learned a lot about that from Ashley, just being in a relationship and kind of, Ashley's a super feminist, by the way, so am I now, but I didn't realize that I could still be like supportive of women and women's rights and be an advocate and at the same time still participate in these microaggressions. And she calls me on my shit a lot. And it's really, really helpful because it's allowed me to self-reflect more and kind of anticipate and see some of those things that I didn't before. But yeah, so it's totally possible for people to not be aware and yet still have those things be microaggressions that underlie.
And where I'm finding ways to really disrupt my own internalized stuff, because we all have it, every one of us has internalized stuff that we deal with, is finding the intersections in my life. Mm-hmm. So yes, I may feel like I really understand racism in this country as it relates to my experience. There's also lots of microaggressions around women that have been ingrained in me because of just the system that we live in. And it's so easy for me to think, well, I ain't doing that thing, and I'm not doing that thing, so I'm good. And then one day you realize, oh, I was thinking that thing? Oh, I'm not as good as I thought I was. Yeah. I know there was this big like op-ed that came out about this female singer, and it was like really kind of derogatory towards her, and I didn't question it, I didn't critique it, I just assumed, because of the man who was talking about it, that it was 100% right. And I was in that feeling of being like, man, that sucks for her that she's like that. And then she put out a statement like a few weeks later that like gave her whole side of the story, and it doesn't really matter whose side is right. What disrupted me was the fact that I wasn't even thinking that there was another side of the story.
Yeah.
You know, and so that happened to me just last week, and being like, dang, Jalen, really? Like, how are you still dealing with that? That seems so elementary, you know? So yeah. We all have it.
I think we have time for maybe one more. Cool.
Hi, I'm Joan. I really like your talk.
Thanks. Like, what's your name?
Joanne.
Jo-it?
Joanne.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Hi.
A lot, it's kind of just like a footnote off of the communication with your friends and like checking up on them. I've kind of realized, like, you know, along with what you were saying, that it seems that us as like, I don't know, like a material being, we speak to others how we're used to speaking versus speaking to them how they should be spoken to. It helps to really, like, you know, the process would be slow to like understand and figure out what a person is like before you can understand how to like speak to them how they should be spoken to, because then that would ultimately end up with them opening up to you rather than you having to check up on them all the time.
For sure. That's good, man. I agree.
Just real last thing, Jalen, how can people get connected with you and the work that you're doing?
Find me on Instagram at, but really find me on Instagram as Jalen Levingston, ZHAILONLAVINGSTON. I'm on Facebook. I have an email address. You can go to, I'm on all the Twitter things and Facebooks and emails. And so if you want my number or information, contact information, find me. I'll get you plugged in.
Cool. Jalen, thank you so much. Thank you for being here. And Jalen's humble and wouldn't mention it, but he is here because he is directing a play that Rob Bell has written. Assistant directing, I'm sorry. He's assistant directing. See, he's humble. But if you're interested in that, it should be really interesting. What are the dates on that?
September 15th through 17th. If you like Rob Bell, if you like his books and his stuff, he's written a new play. It's really dope. It's called What's a Nooka? Don't ask me what it is, because I'll tell you to just come see the play. And it's September 15th through the 17th.
Cool. So if you're interested in seeing Jalen and what he's doing here, that's a great way to check him out. But thank you guys so much for being here. We'll see you next week. Go in peace.